order. Welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Jane Patterson.
At 5, the police have confirmed a number of people were killed. RNZ News at 6, the police are unable to say how many people have been killed. News at 8, the Prime Minister has confirmed at least 40 people have died in the two shootings in Christchurch. RNZ News at 9.
I lost a number of my very, very close childhood friends, all very, very good men. Three of them had young families.
I had a strange feeling, so I called him again and I said, where is your dad? And he said that he'd gone to the mosque and that he'd called him 13 times and he didn't answer. And he said, but Mom, don't worry, I'm sure he will be busy, you know, helping the injured people.
I have injuries on my face and my arm, and then right knee, and then my left legs from, you know, back cast, and then all my around between my hips. So this is Friday 15th of March, that gunman shooting the people and murdering the 50 other peoples, and then 39 other victims.
The shootings on March 15, 2019 changed New Zealand forever.
Muslim New Zealanders should be safe. Anyone who calls New Zealand home, regardless of race, religion, sexual orientation, gender, should be safe.
Nearly 2 years on, and the Royal Commission released its 800-page report that covers the life and upbringing of the gunman, the actions of security and intelligence agencies in the years leading up to the terror attack, and what could and should have been done better. 44 recommendations have resulted, including changes to how firearms and licences are managed, changes to hate crime laws, and eventually a new National Security and Intelligence Agency.
When we set up the inquiry, I said I wanted no stone left unturned to find out how the March 15 attack happened, what could have been done to stop it, and how we can keep New Zealanders safe. Today we have answers.
The police failed to properly vet references, allowing the gunman to get a firearms licence, then purchase an array of high-powered weapons and ammunition. The second major failure lies with the security and intelligence agencies.
For many years, the Muslim community has raised concerns over the disproportionate scrutiny by security and intelligence agencies. As one member of the community put it to me recently, they could only assume that same level of scrutiny was being applied to those who may have posed a threat to their security.
The report found there was an inappropriate concentration of resources and a disproportionate focus on the threat of Islamic terrorism.
While the Commission made no findings that these issues would have stopped the attack, these were failings nonetheless. And for that, on behalf of the government, I apologise.
An apology too from the Director General of the SIS, Rebecca Kitteridge, who acknowledged members of the Muslim community have felt unfairly targeted by the agency.
We only are interested in individuals of security concern, whatever their ideology may be. And I do really feel genuinely, I understand the concerns that the Muslim community have expressed. And I know that it has been really difficult for them over the last few years, and that they have found some of the interactions they've had with my service difficult, and it has made them feel like they're being targeted. And so my apology is genuine today.
And a third apology from Police Commissioner Andrew Costa.
We unreservedly apologise that police's administration of the Arms Act has not always been at the level the public would reasonably expect. Whilst the Commission finds that this would not necessarily have stopped the attack, we understand that we need to demonstrate to the public that we have learned from this event, and I'm committed to ensuring that we give this work the priority it deserves.
A former head of firearms control at the police, Joe Green, says those vetting the man should have been concerned when he couldn't provide credible references.
When I look at a vetting guide which is headed referee, spouse, partner, next of kin, and my consistent statement when I was in the role to arms officers and vetting officers who I did speak to was a spouse, partner, next of kin is the person who knows the applicant best when the front door closes. Now, there's nobody in this file who knew the applicant well when the front door closes. In fact, there's no one who knew the applicant when the front door closes. So the person that they interviewed in place of, I wouldn't agree that there is an in place of. And had I been asked for the advice when I was the manager, I would have said that someone who had met someone online did not equate to a spouse, partner, next of kin, and the appropriate action is to refuse the licence, though the paper does address the issue of refusing licences.
Indeed, this report says that the gaming friend spent 21 days in the gunman's company over the space of 10 years. That was in personal contact. Otherwise, it was all online.
Yes, but to read the actual vetting notes, it doesn't come through that the referee had known the person for such a short time. 21 days. If you look, talking about the spouse, partner, next of kin, knowing someone for 21 days is not sufficient, but the person actually answered and said they'd known the applicant for 10 years.
Commissioner Costa was asked by Susie Ferguson on Morning Report what the police have done to make sure reference checks are as robust as they should be.
We have significantly lifted the level of guidance about the kind of questions that need to be asked of referees and applicants.
Okay, so give us some detail on this. Exactly how has it changed? What has changed?
So the forms as they were before had very open-ended questions, and whilst you know, you might infer the purpose of the questions being there, we now have very specific detail that gets into how long have you known the applicant, what's the nature of your relationship, how frequently do you have contact, and those questions are asked both of the referee and the applicant, so you get the opportunity to see if there's any disagreement in terms of the nature of that relationship. That guidance was not there before.
The report concludes there was no plausible way authorities could have uncovered the attack except by chance. A tough pill to swallow for Anjan Rahman of the Islamic Women's Council.
They did find all these faults in the system, so it's really hard to understand why they would say that there is no possible way they could have detected him.
She says it's difficult to believe there'll be change while the same people remain at the top, namely the head of the SIS, Rebecca Kitteridge.
I know she has apologised for that, but the thing is, what is going to be different now?
While Ms Kitteridge has apologised, she insists the Islamic community has never been monitored as a whole. Green MP Golrees Gurriman says that's not good enough.
What is really deeply concerning is that after we've had our highest level inquiry into this, there's been a damning finding of prejudice against her agency, and she is denying that finding, which does make her, in my opinion, unfit to lead the change that the Commission has recommended. We can't keep relitigating this.
Our reporter Conan Young talked to victims of the attacks in the aftermath of the report about the intelligence failings and the lax management of the firearms regime that allowed the gunman to get a firearms licence shortly after arriving in New Zealand.
That is one of the sections in which I struggled with the most. That would be the section which I would call the what-if section. Because it really just highlighted to me the fact that the individual was able to carry out these actions because of a system that clearly wasn't very effective. Even though it's just a possibility, that's a possibility of 51 lives. You know, that's a possibility of my dad, Abdel Fattah. And that's enormous.
There needs to actually be a lot more accountability from the government and their agencies. These things don't just happen. This was in the planning for 2 years.
I would like to see charges because they have used the authority of their position with the wrong way. They didn't do what exactly they should have done. What if we put it, it's Muhammad, he applied for a gun license. What sort of question they will ask Muhammad? But when John asks for a firearm license, what kind of question John will have? We want to be treated equally.
It was a systematic failure. As a Muslim, whenever I go out from the country, I come back, I've been stopped for 3 hours, 4 hours, searched, asked questions, where did I go, where I have been. And this is a failure when this guy has been to Pakistan, he's been to Turkey, close to the border of Syria, and he's been to the places where he should have been asked questions.
An Australian counter-terrorism specialist says the heads of New Zealand's National Security Services should lose their jobs. Joe Siracusa, a professor of human security at Curtin University in Perth, has combed through intelligence records for decades and says the Royal Commission, like others he's witnessed, is failing to hold individuals accountable.
We say if they couldn't be held, that's the story that we tell the children at night to get them to go to sleep, or we tell the public. Every attack, whether it's the Cafe Lint or the mosque in New Zealand or a failure to detect what was going on with the Shah and the Ayatollah in the 70s, it's always a failure in intelligence. You could probably name 10 intelligence failures in your own lifetime, and then you hear the story at the end of it, well, you know, we missed it. No, I'm sorry. If you miss it, then, you know, go get another job. The idea of not holding them responsible tells the next generation of intelligence people that they can screw up and it's okay. It's not okay. And so I always think we have to reset the button. We have to go back and look at human agency. We have to look at the people who blew it. Somebody was always on the radar and they failed to make the connection. So when someone tells me it's the system or these things will get through, I don't believe it for a minute.
Dr. Chris Wilson from the University of Auckland is an expert on terrorism and political conflict. He says while there had been a lot of talk about intelligence failings in the lead up to its release, the report lays it out in detail and new information has surfaced. He says, though, it's important to understand the constraints on the agency's capacity at the time and the political and security environment they were operating in.
Most of the agencies that they talk about, the SIS and the New Zealand Police National Security Investigations Team, were heavily degraded, were underfunded, so had very few people employed. And NZSIS, as the report points out, in 2014, had only one person who was focused on terrorism. I mean, that's quite striking to me. And so they were very under-resourced. So around that time in the years, you know, 2014, 2015, leading up to March 2019, those agencies needed to make a decision on what were the most pressing threats that they needed to focus on. Now, we have to remember that in 2014, so over those years that we're talking about, ISIS not only took over a large part of the Middle East and Syria and Iraq, but ISIS supporters started carrying out a large number of lone wolf attacks around the West. And so I know, as an academic who focuses on these topics, that academics, commentators, media, government agencies and the public were really, really focused on Islamist terrorism and ISIS-related terrorism in particular.
Andrew Little, the minister responsible for the spy agencies and now responsible for implementing the recommendations, acknowledged the fact that a lack of public debate and buy-in helped create an environment in which terror attacks could be planned and carried out.
We need to be talking about threats and we need to be talking about how we deal with those threats. And we haven't, and it simply hasn't been part of our political culture to talk about national security and intelligence issues in that way. We simply have not given ourselves the opportunity to do that.
And what I'm saying is, does somebody need to take responsibility for that?
We've now had the opportunity to reflect on that. I spoke to the, and I can tell you now, and I don't know whether I'm breaching my Section 15 orders now, I spoke to the Royal Commission about the way we simply do not have good quality public discussion about national security and intelligence issues, and we need to.
He was asked if he had full confidence in the head of the SIS.
I have confidence her in running the SIS and the transformative way that she has changed that that organisation. I would say the same of Andrew Hampton at the GCSB. But the Royal Commission, having reflected on where things are at, says, and I think quite correctly and quite properly, that the decisions made about resourcing our total counter-terrorism effort meant that we did not shift off the demonstrable need to deal with Islamic extremism, which arose from the 2000s, into other forms of extremism that were evident by the late 2000s.
The Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, was asked whether there's been a lack of accountability given the report's findings.
No, actually, the report found that there were no failings that led to the terrorist act going undetected, and therefore
you draw from that, nothing that necessarily could have been done from the agencies that would have necessarily prevented the 15th of March.
But the agencies allowed an environment in which the attack could take place to go and no one's been held accountable for that. So
in reading the report, you see them very plainly put that even with, for instance, the inappropriate level of concentration of resource on particular threats to New Zealand, even then the report found that they did not believe that that contributed to what happened on the 15th of March. Now, what will be key for us is that regardless, it has found failings nonetheless, and those are things that we are committed to remedying and fixing.
So should someone be held accountable for the fact that there were failings?
I lean heavily on the report. I mean, 18 months of work. They haven't found that it sits down with at any one individual level. I think the role for us is, as a government, there are a range of areas that need to be reformed. We collectively must take responsibility for that, and we are.
And so you're confident the people who are leading the security and public agencies at the moment are the right people to be reforming that area?
Change is required, and they accept that too.
That's Focus on Politics. I'm Jane Patterson. This is the last programme for the year, and we'll be back on January 29th, 2021. From the RNZ Gallery team, we wish you a safe, enjoyable and relaxing summer break, and we'll see you again in the new year. Mā te wā.